This is CliffCentral.com.
No more bullshit.
The Gareth Cliff Show
on CliffCentral.com.
Hero of the stupid.
A lot of wind in Johannesburg this morning. Some people have been blown away. Hopefully it's the shit people. The rest of us can carry on with our morning. Amanda walked in this morning. Amanda's not hugely expressive about a lot of things, but she walked in this morning. She's like, wow, you will not believe the wind on the East Ront. The East Ront, apparently the wind there is just blowing people from side to side off the roads. Their houses are... I mean, it's disastrous. And then she said, and here, nothing. Here where our studios are, so I hope wherever you are this morning, it's not too bad.
Gareth, I saw someone yesterday, I came out of a meeting, and a tree fell on the guy.
Stop! No!
Okay, look, it was funny because he was unhurt. But obviously, if he went down in a heap, it wouldn't have been funny, but this tree just broke, and everyone stared at him. It was just so awkward.
Really? That's terrible.
But, like, you don't often hear the sound of a massive tree splitting in two.
No.
And it fell, and he was like, huh?
God, that's hectic. That's very hectic. Gord Laws is here, everybody.
Hello, oh, everyone. My God.
Yeah, there were hugs. There were hugs in the preamble to this.
It's been such a long time since we had you in here, and you've got lots to update us on, but let me just make sure that everybody knows that the entire crew's here. So Mubs is here. Sia's here. Ben is here. Amanda's here. And Gord.
And the wind.
And the wind, wow.
The wind outside, thank goodness. So I was thinking that it was a wonderful metaphor, like a microcosm for the difference between Joburg and Cape Town, right? So in Cape Town, it's windy as gosh darn all the time. Mm. But that wind carries with it wetness. So the wind is miserable wind, but it's like only occasionally dangerous. Whereas in Johannesburg, the same wind carries with it sand. So it's aggressive, painful fight wind.
There were dust storms all over Johannesburg yesterday, apparently. Mm. Yeah. I was in meetings non-bloody stop. I got home. I left home yesterday morning at 5:15, and I got back to my house at 22:10. Mm. And I hit that bed with a vengeance. Woke up this morning, I was like, there's no way I got enough sleep. But, you know, you got to move on. You got to get things done. And during the course of the day, I was getting these updates from people. Whoa, can you believe this wind? I was inside in meeting rooms the whole time. I didn't see any of it. Was there a big dust storm? Did you see it?
Well, where my other offices are, they're busy with huge, huge, heavy, major construction. Uh-oh. And so every 5 minutes you're busy shuffling grains of sand in your mouth. You're like, move it from the left to the right.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it was insane yesterday.
The sky was an ominous color.
Yeah, it was.
I thought for a moment it was the apocalypse until social media informed me that it was the dust storm. But I was actually kind of disappointed. I was like, yay, everyone, apocalypse. We can go home. And it was like, oh, no, it's just a dust storm.
No, I was driving by Marlborough and then I just couldn't see anymore.
Really?
Just so, especially there, it was insane.
Yeah, like the whole of Sandton CBD was obscured and I'm a kilometer away from it. I couldn't see anything.
That's heavy. You couldn't put your drone up in that weather, right?
No, and I got it back yesterday, and I was so excited.
Yeah, well, better you didn't put it up in that weather. You would have had to send it straight back in for repairs.
You would have lost it, yeah.
Well, we've survived, and there is this... what is it called? It's called eschatology, when you're obsessed with the end times, when you're obsessed with Armageddon.
Obsessed with or just waiting patiently for.
But people are. There are a lot of people who can't wait for the end.
Like those preppers.
Doomsday preppers.
Yeah, preppers. You know, a lot of very religious people are eschatologists in that they actually fervently hope for the end because they've run out of answers. And the end will bring final resolution, a final solution.
Have any of you read the book or seen the movie of Cormac McCarthy's The Road?
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Yes, like Cormac McCarthy wrote All the Pretty Horses, No Country for Old Men. He's badass. He doesn't dig punctuation, but he's one of those people where he's accomplished enough as a writer that he can choose. He understands something, therefore can choose to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't get me started on punctuation. Anyway, it's a post-apocalyptic thing. It's a man and his son in post-apocalyptic America, and they're trying to do is get to the coast from like the middle. And yussy, it is desolate and depressing and hardcore as everything is dead. And like, then they find,
is it like after a nuclear holocaust?
You never find out. They talk about there were three deep percussions, and he put his wife and his kid in the bath. And that was all you know. It could have been a volcano. It could have been a meteor. It could have been nuclear. But everything's dead, and the sky's black from ash. And yes, the movie's like, the book's amazing. The movie's very good as well, if you want to save yourself the time. Anyway, they stumble across this like doomsday preppers. Like, they hit lottery at some point in it, and they stumble across this prepper's like bunker. They realize like, and then they've got like stuff.
And the prepper's dead.
Yeah, they've got stuff that can last them like weeks or even months, but they realize they can't stay there because they'll, you know, eventually run out, and the keeping moving is more important. But yeah, like, there's people who build bunkers. They've got like a year's worth of water, a year's worth of tinned food, gas.
I've seen these guys on TV. They do these specials on them.
Mm.
And they are obsessed. They collect canned goods, and they stockpile water, and they have these bunkers, as you say, that are underground, that are fueled. They've got generators and diesel and petrol, and I mean, they spend their entire life. Their above ground house is nothing compared with their below ground house. They've got bedrooms and TV rooms and communication centers. And
how depressing, you know, to be an eschatologist and you like dedicate your life to this, and at no point do you get to see the reward. Like, you're on your deathbed, you 80 something.
No, and you've spent your life and a huge amount of your money prepping, and then you don't.
Shit, it never happened. Can you guys just put me in the prep room for my final moments?
Well, it's like those people who.
For it to be worth it.
Yeah, it's always just pretend. There's people who predict the end of the world, and then when it doesn't come, I always think that's the greatest disappointment of them all for
Remember
those
2012?
Yeah, there was that one guy, and he had like a whole cult of people who followed him. He said, no, it's definitely going to end. Spend all your money now.
Mm.
Get rid of material possessions. Sell your house.
Have loads of sex, surely.
Oh, everything? Well, no, look, he was religious, so, you know, sex is no.
So was David Koresh, but that was how you got closer to the Lord.
Well, you know, some of them do it right. Anyway, and then it didn't happen, and all these people were stuck. They were destitute. They'd spent all their money. They were waiting for the end of the world. They weren't preppers because they weren't expecting to survive. So they were waiting on mountaintops for God to come and get them.
Mm.
And for the flood waters to rise and the fire to come and all that stuff. And it never happened. It was just a normal day. The sun rose, the sun set.
Mm.
No dramatic events occurred during there.
Bit of a dust storm.
And this guy went, well, I might have been off by a couple of years in my calculation, but it's still coming.
Yeah, see, that's the problem with drugs. The cheap ones mess you up. You've got to go primo.
Yeah, but I don't know why if you've made a prediction and you got it
by it,
you got it wrong. No, there should be a punishment. There should be like the rest of the town should be able to put you in those stocks and throw vegetables at you for the rest of your life.
Well, also at the same time, though, if you follow and you believe someone like that, that's kind of your punishment, though.
Yeah, but Gareth, really, that's also like saying. That's like saying to a Bulls fan, oh, your team's going to be great next year. People have their things.
Yeah, that's true.
Liverpool fans.
But you know that doomsday bunkers have surged since Donald Trump got into power.
Yeah, but there's with good reason.
So you get these lavish doomsday bunkers, right, like for billionaires. And apparently they've gone through the roof in value since Donald Trump came to be.
And rich Silicon Valley types are buying property in New Zealand because they say that'll be the furthest from nuclear war. So all these very rich people are suddenly buying up huge tracts of land in South Island, New Zealand.
One of those diabolically crap Armageddon movies. I think it was The Day After Tomorrow, but they all blend into one in my head.
Where like Dennis Quaid has the answer for something.
There was like a and his president. There's like a very ultra wealthy people have got this ark. And like, there's some sort of lottery where the workers, like one in every 1,000 workers, can get their family on. So people work on it. But this doomsday shit actually can be bloody traumatic. I remember being a kid, and when you're a kid, your parents talk about stuff in front of you. They think you're too thick to understand it, like divorces and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother can of worms. But I remember my mother discussing Nostradamus, and I must have been like 9 or 10. And the thing was like the war to end all wars was meant to start brewing in 1994, and the world was supposed to end in 1999.
You imagine
in this country
with the crash and the.
Yeah. I spent literally like 5, 6, 7 years of my life traumatized and terrified, believing the end of the world was coming, and I was like a kid. It's not funny.
No, before you moved to Four Ways.
Well, that's when the end of the world did come.
In all seriousness, this is it's really a kind of child abuse to put this into your kid's head as well, because there is no likelihood, and don't believe anyone who tells you otherwise, that this planet's going to end anytime during our lifetimes. And for the next 1,000 years or so, even if climate change is really horrendous, it's still going to be a very habitable place. The only way we could foreseeably shorten that window of habitable space is if we started a nuclear war.
And now the two men with the smallest metaphorical penises in the world,
Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un,
have got all the nukes.
Well, not all. Kim Jong-un might have one or two.
They've got lots.
He hasn't necessarily got the missiles to get them.
You know Trump is dying to nuke somebody. You know that's been a thing of his since he was a kid.
He's seeing the shiny red button.
Here's what will happen if Trump decides to send a nuclear missile at North Korea. China has said they won't intervene if North Korea do it first. If North Korea are predated upon without warning by the United States, then China will have to reconsider their position. But trust me, they're not going to start firing nukes at the USA. Mm. China have too many assets in the USA for that to happen. So it will be a very short, very tidy little campaign, but there will be many, many millions of people dead in a space of a couple of hours. Have you ever paid attention to what actually happened during the 1940s to 1970s in terms of nuclear technology, the proliferation of weapons, the size of things like the H-bomb, and how quickly that could put paid to anyone's tyrannical ambitions.
No.
China nuking the States would be a little bit like the ANC nuking the Guptas.
Yeah. Would not be the best.
Kind of be the other way around, actually, but you get the idea for the purposes of that simile.
Oh, no.
How are we going to get our stuff if we nuke China? And here are a couple of points on these Armageddon-type things, because we were talking about the weather yesterday in Johannesburg. It was distinctly ominous. Sounds like north of the wall here in Greenstone, says someone. They're in Greenstone, and the wind is ridiculous.
That's how I feel when I leave my front door.
Mm.
It's like I'm going north of the wall.
Mm. You have to wear a fur coat.
You ride on a motorbike.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going north of the wall.
I can believe that in Greenstone. I drove through there. It was not.
North of the well, the white workers. They're all over. The wildlings. Yeah, it's pretty hectic.
You know, I often just think, really, if I was ever put in a Will Smith situation in I Am Legend, I really do think I'd just be like, deuces, I'm not going to save humanity, guys. I can't. This is too much pressure for me. All of these...
Who would you want with you if you were... Like, if you had to choose a squad of people to survive, like the zombie apocalypse, because that's much more doable. You know, nature isn't destroyed.
Yeah.
There's still resources, and you can make a little enclave and survive for a long time. Who would you want with you in your squad for zombie apocalypse?
Entirely depends on what kind. We have to specify what kind.
I just need someone who would fight.
The slow hobble. Of course, I believe that would be the easiest zombie apocalypse to contain ever. Sure. Like, you could stand there, you could toy with the thing. It's like, I watch these movies where the slow, idiotic zombies.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just like, seriously? You were overrun
by that?
You'd have
to be really stupid to be eaten by them.
Yeah, but then you get like the 28 days later, World War Z, you get the sprinting zombies.
Yeah, oh my God.
And that's hardcore shit right there. Then you're
those
in proper
things
trouble.
Look like they also have rabies. It's scared the bejesus.
They're also pretty strong. Yeah, they're strong and they seem more like, you know, mad.
And they've got got zero sense of self-preservation. They just want to bite your dick off. And like, in 28 days later and 28 weeks later, they weren't actually even zombies. They just had a virus, the rage virus. Those movies were so cool and they freaked me out so hard, because then you are fucked. Excuse my language.
No, it's true.
Actually, I would...
Right, the slow zombies. Because that, I mean, that's likelier if you're dying.
How can you
run that fast? How can you be that effective? How can you be a super strong human if your muscles are rotting off your bones? It's got to be the slow, retarded type of zombie.
But then you just get a mate who's good at jokes, because you're going to have to hole up somewhere for a while. You hit the occasional one with a cricket bat. They can't... Honestly, if you get eaten by zombies like that, you deserve to. Because you could stand right in front of it, flick it on the nose, and then duck when it tries to like slowly Frankenstein on
you. Yeah, it would be more scary to have like a wheelchair apocalypse where everybody in wheelchairs takes over. That would be far more dangerous than the zombie apocalypse. No, really. Like the wheelchair people, if they turned on us.
I feel like I'm just not going to comment because there's something about this feels all like dangerous
disabled,
territory.
If all the disabled people suddenly took over and, you know, they became predators, that would be easier to harder to contain than the slow zombies.
Yes, Gareth.
No, the thing is, like, slow zombies, they seem to just, like, gather. So they'll be, like, out of nowhere, there'll be 300 and you're stuck in the alleyway.
But also at the same time, in my head, I picture through one simple song a la Michael Jackson Thriller, we could all just come together, you know?
And do choreographed spontaneous dancing.
That would be so funny. Imagine Sia's superpower. All these zombies are killers until you sing Thriller. And then the only person that can sing Thriller and make them dance is Sia, and everyone's seeking him around the world.
We need Sia. Get Sia to sing Thriller.
He would be the Messiah.
Oh my God.
We'd all have to have sex with him in his commune in order to stay in the cult.
Okay, that just took too far, Gordon. That went too far.
Yeah, I'll go outside and taunt the zombies.
Wait, where's he got time for all of this?
What sort of stamina do I have? That would be a bit too much.
You've got the whole entire post-apocalypse. You've got years.
Oh, okay.
You make a list. You start at the top and you work your way to the bottom. Right. And then you... Yeah. Don't talk about the bottom anymore.
Yes, see a superpower. All right, listen, we've got to get to the 5 things you need to know today to start your day and plenty of other interesting stuff through the course of the morning on cliffcentral.com. We have stuff to do, people to see, places to go. So let's get straight to it. Mabale Moloi has got the 5 things you need to know.
Well, we'll begin with Cape Town, who are basically hogging the headlines today. Firstly, a report due to be released this morning reveals that Cape Town is the murder capital of South Africa. Yay! The 2017 State of Urban Safety Report examines the state of crime and violence in the nation's urban centers. And in terms of murder rates, Cape Town, congratulations on your top spot.
Wow.
Nelson Mandela Bay and Buffalo City are also right in there. Now, unsurprisingly, people living in these cities also report the highest levels of fear.
We are in government in Cape Town.
And then in an entirely different headline altogether, 9 of the country's richest suburbs in South Africa are all in Cape Town. Another yay.
All right, so... let's just, because I know what's coming up in a little while, let's park this for the moment. We'll get back to it. But, you know, there's this link between gangsterism in the Cape and alcoholism and all kinds of other stuff that we need to talk about there. Those poverty statistics that I have no doubt you'll refer to in a moment or two, which Pali Lehoatla put out last night, I think, about how much poverty there is in the country and who lives below the poverty line. But I do think Cape Town's got a major problem here because there's also enormous inequality. If you live in Constantia or you live in Lavender Hill, the difference between the start of your day and the end of your day and the part in between is huge. It's almost like you could be in a different universe.
By that you mean your whole day, Gareth. And it's such a strange thing because it's like the most prime real estate in the country, so you can understand it from a supply and demand perspective. Mm. Like, damn you, rich people, go live somewhere else. It's like, well, no, this is the most prime real estate in the country. They're going to spend... Also, it's a limited resource. The City Bowl, the surrounds, the Atlantic seaboard from, you know, all the way to...
There's only so much space.
You can't build any higher on the mountain. You can't build into the sea. So if you want to build something super expensive and amazing, then you've got to find something, knock it over, or refurbish it and build it again. So it makes sense that that's where rich people want to be and that the properties keep getting redeveloped and becoming more expensive. And then there's, I won't say shitty, but there's like there's unremarkable areas for days surrounding this little gem in the middle.
Flats.
Yeah, so it's like it's geographical and it's also, you know, historically political. There's a lot going on there, but you're never going to get rich people to be like, yeah, you know, you're right. We should like move somewhere else and
where it's shit.
Turn our 7-room mansion into 7 flats.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Anyway, so what else is in the news?
So a recent study by Property Group based on data from Lightstone and Props Fats for the period of...
Props to the fat people. Yeah.
For the period 2011 to 2017 has revealed that Cape Town is home to 9 of the 10 richest suburbs in South Africa. The only Joburg suburb making it into that top 10 list is Sandhurst. But yeah, Constantia, Upper, Bishop's Court, Waterfront, Kemp's Bay, Bantry Bay, and Clifton tops the list of the most.
But that's like one suburb. Come on, let's face it.
What do you mean?
Clifton, Kemp's Bay, Bantry. Okay, Kemp's Bay maybe, but like, it's like saying Sandton. It's enormous. You could fit you could fit more than half of what you've just described, which are shoulder to shoulder. And so it's basically saying the seaboard is the most, is the wealthiest.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So do you want to take on the people who compile this list? Do you want to take on Props Fats?
Oh, I think if Props Fats had to combine like the Cape Town suburbs into three, which is what it sounds like to me, they'd have to find another seven, and a lot of them would be in Joburg.
All right, well, you know what? Props Fats are basically saying that...
Props Fats say F you.
Who am I to argue with Props
Fats? Yeah, who are you to argue with Props Fats? They're saying that the richest suburbs in South Africa are in Cape Town. They're also saying that that's where you're likely to get your ass killed. Okay? Now, speaking about Stats SA, yes, poverty trends have been reported, and they show that the number of people living in extreme poverty has increased. We're now at nearly 14 million South Africans that are living below the poverty line. That's according to Statistician General Badile Hohla, who released a report yesterday. And the 2015 food poverty line was 441 rand per person per month. That is the amount of money needed to buy the bare minimum of food for adequate nutrition. And so, yes. And so 14 million South Africans are living below that line. The report also found that in this year, 13.8 million people were living on less than that every month. And the figure has increased since 2011. Yeah.
Jeez, that's very little money. If you can survive on under 500 rand a month, I would love you to show me how that's even possible, because I can't imagine a whole family living on under 500 rand a month. You would have to be extraordinarily good with every cent, and you'd have to grow most of your food, and you wouldn't go anywhere because transport would cripple you. There's no way. There's just no way. We'll talk about this just now. There's no way we could do that. After 7 o'clock, I want to hear your thoughts on that. All right.
Yeah, that's it.
Those are the five things you need to know this morning. Let's get to Ben and find out what's going on in the sport. And then we've got Anthea, Said by Sia, and then the news. So lots to get to. Here's Ben.
All right. Well, Gareth, the biggest thing in sport right now is Tiger Woods' cock. It has been revealed.
What? Has everybody seen it?
You go, pass it around. So there's been some leaked pictures. You know, like, well, we'll get into this next hour as well. I think perverts like invented the cloud, because they knew all celebrities would put their privates up there.
So yeah, that's a decent one.
Yeah. So,
decent.
That's more than decent.
No, it's decent.
That's a three word right there.
It's above par. Yeah,
it's average.
Yeah. So anyway, so Tiger and
Tiger's wood.
Okay, settle down, Sia. Settle down. I knew this would cause a kerfuffle. So anyway, Tiger and his ex-girlfriend, Lindsay Vonn, their privates have been thrown all over the place.
Oh, so we've got Lindsay's vagina out there as well.
Well, Tiger's a freak. You can imagine what he was asking for. He doesn't just say send nudes. Tiger asks for biology. And Lindsay, to her credit, she stepped up. But this is what I hate about whenever celebrity nudes come out. Everyone becomes so holier than thou. It's like, if you've never sent a dick pic in your life as a guy, you've never lived. So nobody can judge Tiger. If anything, again, I respect him a lot more now that he's thrown it out there.
And that is a hefty wang. I'm sorry, I don't know what Mubs thinks, but that's a hefty wang.
It's all right.
She's seen bigger, is what she's saying.
Look, I just think it's such a normal thing, and Tiger's a normal human being. I mean, this guy was caught to all kinds of escorts. You think he hasn't sent a dick pic to somebody?
Oh.
This isn't exactly shock horror.
I thought that was his currency, frankly.
Exactly. Shock horror.
Hey, baby.
But now, of course, Lindsay Vonn, because she's the woman in this, she is being hauled over the coals. We were calling her names. And the women are so angry about her because she has... Well, they're depicting her vagina in a very unflattering way. Onto the flay.
Well, hang on, what do you mean?
Well, women are getting really upset and like just mean about the general construction of her vagina.
Oh, they're saying she has an ugly vagina.
Vaginas are ugly to begin with. Can all these women get fucked? with immediate effect.
Right. This is what Daniela was telling me about half an hour yesterday, because she was having a huge rant.
No, she can get fucked.
Taking people on Facebook about this.
Every single one of them.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Let's not go judging all vaginas in a sweeping.
Vaginas are ugly.
Exactly.
Well, just because you're not a lesbian.
Back to the sport.
Doesn't mean the rest of us can't.
So the Mayweather-McGregor fight, or is it just hype or is it just tripe? Everyone's going on about the fact that if McGregor somehow wins this would be the biggest travesty to boxing. Other people are saying if he wins it, then maybe this new interest in boxing because there's a guy who's changed codes and he could do something amazing. Well, there's so many different factors about this fight, and some people are just plain bored of it. They're just tired of all the crap and all the shit talk.
I don't care.
I'm dying for this fight. I can't wait.
Well, basically, you'll have to wait until 5:30 Sunday morning South African time. That's basically when it'll kick off, okay? So, look, it'll be entertaining. It'll be a big show.
Sure.
And like I always tell you, sport is entertainment. It's nothing overly magical sport. It's to make you entertained.
Yeah, we've got an office betting pool, which we'll tell you about later on. That's sprung up out of the woodwork. Everybody who I thought was not interested is suddenly interested.
Yeah, so it's set for 12 rounds. McGregor reckons it's going to be quick. Mayweather thinks that McGregor might not make the weight. Now, you have to be 100 and... you've got to be 154 pounds, right? So that's, what, 70-something kilograms. And that's what you've got to be. Now, currently, McGregor is above that. He's gone up and fought as much as 170 pounds, but he has to come down. He's got a big head just like me, so he's going to have to put a big sweat on between now and Sunday. Well, now and actually the weigh-in. Otherwise, he is, well, he's in trouble. Teddy Austin's in trouble as the Bulls. John Mitchell has come in there and says, you guys have no standards. Nolis Marais was currently put on some sort of probation / paid leave or something. But basically, John Mitchell's right in saying that, look, the standards have slipped here. This is a team that won the Super Rugby Championship 3 times. And now, I mean, it's just piss poor what's going on there. Basic standards haven't been adhered to. And Mitchell's in there to basically crack the whip. And everyone's cucking themselves at the moment. The T20 Global Protea Destination League thing, that big thing here. I always get this name wrong because it's so long. This weekend, they'll have the big draft pool for all the players. So, if you're a local player or international player, there'd be 200 domestic players going into this bidding pool, right? And all the team owners get around and they say, I want this guy and I'm prepared to pay this much for him. Mm-hmm. There'll be as many as 90 international players also in. Essentially, 32 international players will be picked and 96 local players will be picked. All taking place on Sunday. That's going to be, well, anticlimactic, but still. It's a big deal. It's a big deal for cricket in this country. But it does cock things up because this thing's going to go until December, right? Now, India, being India, they were meant to come play Test cricket in South Africa, Boxing Day, New Year's Day. Huge, huge money spinner for the CSA. India are like umming and ahhing as usual, just being dicks. They just always do this to us. But now, if they don't play, then there's no Boxing Day test. Then there's no New Year's Day test. These are huge money spinners and fantastic drinking opportunities for people on holiday.
All right.
So everyone loses here at this stage. And Cricket South Africa are also contemplating maybe a one-off test against somebody. But at that time of year, you'll be lucky if you can get, like, Ravensmead First 11 to come play a cricket match.
Sure.
It's a cricket club in Cape Town, by the way. Because Australia...
You made that up. It was like a Game of Thrones team.
Such a cool name. Ravensmead.
Yeah, three-eyed Ravens batsmen's. Because England and Australia are playing the Ashes. We've played Sri Lanka to death. Pakistan have got their own stuff on the go. Nobody wants to play the West Indies. Who are we going to play? We're playing Bangladesh already. So we've got no one to play. India, I hate you. These guys have our balls and device all the time. And they know it. And they love it.
Who are they going to play if they don't play us?
They'll do whatever they want. They'll just keep counting their money or just play with Dhoni's hair or something. I don't know. They've always got stuff to do. In the football, Ronaldo has been trying to appeal the ban. Occasionally, he took his shirt off, he flexed, and then the ref basically gave him a red card for being a dick and then diving. Well, then he pushed the ref, and surprise, surprise, he was given a 5-match ban. Now he says he's being persecuted, he's playing the big victim card, but he pushed the ref. I don't care how good your abs are, Cristiano, but you pushed the ref. That's unbecoming at best. So he will not be playing. He's trying to use all his money and all that kind of stuff. But no, you're not playing. Your ban will stand. But you will be able to play Champions League sort of 12th or 13th of September. And finally, there was PSL action last night. Sundowns, they lost to Polokwane City at home 2-1. Chipper beat AmaZulu 2-0. And then Baroka held Pirates 1-1. Tonight, we'll see more action in the PSL. Cape Town City will host Platinum Stars, 7:30 South African time. All these games, 7:30. Chiefs take on Super Sport United. Free State Stars versus the Wits. Maritzburg versus Cape Town, IS Cape Town, and Golden Arrows, Bloom Celtic. That is a whirlwind look at your sport for this Wednesday.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben. Let's go to Anthea and see what's going on in the finance this morning, at least in terms of what the markets are up to. It's the money shot. You can catch it at this time every single day. Anthea, over to you. Okay. What do you got, Anthea?
Good morning, Gareth. I've got good news for you for a change.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, the All-Share Index was up over 1% yesterday. Resources, financials, the industrial indices, all higher. The big surprise, which I would not have guessed in a million years, retailers had a massive rally yesterday. ShopRite was up 8% yesterday. They reported their full year set of earnings results. I mean, I had a look at these results, and on the top line, kind of pretty much what we expected. So by no means worth an 8% in one day rally. So I'm really surprised by that. And on top of that, it pulled all the other retailers higher. Truett was up over 2%. Mr. Price, Woolworths, both up over 1%. I mean, so ShopRite managed to grow turnover by 11% year on year. Diluted headline earnings per share, 16%. So, I mean, that's a great number, double-digit growth in this environment. We love it. But no more than expected. I mean, the new CEO, Peter Engelbrecht, said that they're planning to ramp up their affluent and higher income consumers. So in other words, looking to garner market share from Woolworths, and I'm guessing it's through their Checkers brand.
Right.
And then they'll also focus on private label products. So, you know, the cheaper products, the no-name brand, remember those? So that's what kind of they'll be focusing on. And they seem to have already launched about over 340 new kind of no-name brand products. So I guess that's their strategy going forward. It's interesting to see the retailers bounce. I don't know if you saw the Stats SA report. Yes, it was damning. That said more than 55% of South Africans are now living in poverty. So, I mean, if you just compare those two, you know, the ShopRite results being so good and that report, it's kind of contradicting each other, really. You really want to be scared of holding on to these consumer shares if anything doesn't change in the economy.
I hear you. What did you think of those poverty statistics?
Oh, it was heartbreaking. What was the number? 2.8 million people joined the group of people that live on 440 rand a month. I don't know how. That's all, like that. That's the part that shocks me. I just, it's impossible to me. And so, and the report also said that the poor spend more than 30% of their income on food compared to the non-poor, which only spend 10.5% of their income. And these stats, and I love numbers, so these stats, I could just keep throwing them out. But they are just horrendous. I mean, the other interesting thing was that 9 out of 10 people actually have electricity to their home. 75.6% have piped water, but only 64% have flush toilets. And that seems a bit odd to me. I didn't think that many people had electricity to the home in South Africa, actually, especially in the rural areas. But if that's what Stats SA are saying, who am I to argue with them, right?
But it's a very damning report in many ways, considering how many years of the ANC government we've had. And they made it clear at the beginning of 1994's new regime that they would be focusing on bringing basic services to all the people of South Africa. I mean, the slogan has always been a better life for all. And there are more poor people now, according to Stats SA, than there were then.
Absolutely. It's devastatingly heartbreaking. I mean, it's funny how when the ANC does the budget speech, they're almost proud of how many people are on social welfare, as if they're supporting people and it's a good thing. No, it's actually a really, really bad thing. We can't afford it as a country, and you don't want people on social welfare. So, and this report just really points to exactly that.
Very, very sad. I'm kind of upset by that. But besides the poverty stuff, you're saying yesterday was a good day on the stock markets. How's international market action going?
So, yeah, global markets are pretty much in positive territory as well. The world central bankers meet today in Jackson Hole. So I suspect it'll be quiet. I think investors are waiting to hear what the leaders of the free world, of, well, the world's economies are going to say. I guess the big question is what will the U.S. do about their interest rates, and when will they, if at all, raise interest rates? I personally think it's going to be a bit of a non-event. I mean, I think we know what the data says. China's still growing at close to 7%. The U.S. is growing nicely. They've got wage increase, lowest unemployment they've ever had, all these kind of great things. I guess it's us that's really lagging behind the rest of the world. And I don't think Janet Yellen's going to say anything that's going to change on her last speech about, you know, being patient about raising interest rates. So that the dollar has strengthened a little bit. The rand is now 13.23 against the dollar last time I checked. I think that could reverse, though, after these Jackson Hole meetings.
That's not good.
Yeah, well, it'll be okay for us because our rand will strengthen.
All right. One last thing I wanted to ask you about. There are lots of people talking about the Naspers share in the last couple of weeks and how that's gone up and down. We've gone over 2,900.
Look at you telling me the price of shares.
Haven't we? Have we ever crossed the 3,000 mark?
No, we haven't. I think this is an all-time high, 2,900 and something. We did cross 2,900, but I'm not sure what the high was. But no, we've never done a 3,000 rand a share. I don't think so.
Who holds all these Naspers shares? Do we know who the major shareholders are?
Bob van Dyk, the CEO.
So we know he's entering the billionaire stakes. But I mean, are there sort of people who invested early on in Naspers who are suddenly billionaires that might only find that out this morning?
That's a very good question. I think there'll be a lot of people who own Naspers shares. It is the biggest company by market cap in Africa. But I couldn't specifically at this stage point to who has been holding them the longest, because that's really what you're asking me. Yeah. Who's been holding this share since it's been a 20 Rand share to a 2,900 Rand share? I'm sure there'll be a couple of people who would happily say they did, but whether or not they did, you know what it's like. They'll hold, buy at 20, sell at 60, buy at 100, sell at 120, buy at 500, sell at 520, maybe even sell at 300. You know how this goes. You know this game.
Yes.
But it certainly would have made a couple of millionaires, that's for sure.
Wow, that would be something.
I could go and look in the register if you want me to.
Well, I'd just be curious.
It's actually an easy thing to do.
One or two people. It might be really interesting info just to sort of look at these people who invested early on and just hold on to that share for 20, 30 years.
Right. I'm going to jump onto my Bloomberg screen in a few minutes then.
All right.
I'll tell you tomorrow.
Very good. Anything else you want to throw in?
The last thing was Billiton reported slightly weaker than expected results. I'm not going to go through the results. I'm just going to say I'm glad we own the share in our portfolio. So that's had a nice little bounce. And I think there's another 13% upside to where it's trading at the moment. So we're going to hold on to it for a bit longer.
Cool. Thank you, Anthea.
Thanks. Bye.
Very good. Anthea Gardner and the Money Shot. Sia, it's your turn. It's said by Sia. This is what we do around this time every morning, just to give you a little shot of inspiration and wisdom. And sometimes Sia finds things that you would unexpectedly gloss over in the normal media, in the normal press. So what do you got for us today?
And particularly things I think we should be paying attention to. So shout out to this guy. His name is Sam Carter, and he's the lead singer of the British metalcore band, The Architects. Now, he was performing in the Netherlands, and you know, it's an amazing time, and the crowd is there, and everyone's bopping along to the music, and there was a young lady who then decided to crowd surf. Now, the entire premise is to just like move over the crowd, and the crowd, you know, just swings you over to the front or the back, or whatever direction. And there was one particular guy who decided to take advantage of the situation.
Groped her?
And started groping this woman. Yeah. And Sam, the lead singer, actually saw this from stage and stopped the concert to then direct this dude and be like, yo, this is not cool. So imagine this, in middle of a concert, this guy actually like decided to stop and say what's on his mind. So kudos to him.
I've been going over in my fucking mind about whether I should say something or not about what I saw in that last song. And you know what? I'm gonna fucking say it. I saw a girl a woman crowd surfing over here, and I'm not gonna fucking point the piece of shit out that did it, but I saw you fucking grab at her boob. I saw it. It is fucking disgusting, and there is no fucking place for that shit. It is not your fucking body. It is not your fucking body, and you do not fucking grab at someone. Not on my fucking show. So if you feel like doing that again, walk out there and fuck off and don't come back.
Yeah, it's not your boob.
Let's keep this going. Let's keep this a fucking safe place for everybody. And let's have a fucking good time.
All right.
Look, what I like about this is he seems like the most unlikely politically correct or standing up for rights person out there. But he actually said, no, I'm not going to stand for this and screw you, dude. And so he was not going to have this at his concert. So Sam Carter, lead singer of The Architects, kudos to you.
Nice.
Yeah.
So don't believe that someone who has tons of tattoos and a shaved head is necessarily the guy who cares least about women's rights.
Oh yeah, the metal community.
He's gonna hear.
Oh, how apt, because you'll stand.
Here's our only foray into the metal community.
The metal community are generally speaking a really really cool progressive bunch. Yeah. We look after each other and we take care of each other at shows, and we generally consider ourselves not to be a bunch of, you know, bigots and boob grabbers.
And sometimes you just happen to also bite the heads off birds.
Well, that would be Ozzy Osbourne in the 70s. It was a bat, and that's also an herb. But yeah, anyway, moral of the story is I've actually seen Architects, and they're a brilliant band, and I wouldn't have been surprised by this at all.
Okay.
Awesome.
Well, then we're learning. See?
Funnily enough, Slipknot have a similar kind of approach to this, and if you were to do that in front of Corey Taylor, he would stop the show and kick your ass. Jeez. But that's a whole other conversation.
Well, we might have to have it.
Yeah.
It is now 7:08. We'll come up with some news in the next little bit, talk about all those things that we mentioned earlier, including those poverty statistics. How the hell does a family manage to survive on $500 a month?
Mm.
And I think it was probably about a month or two ago that I mentioned that in the rural Eastern Cape, that low household income seems to be the lowest in the country, which is quite something. I've always said if we just did a few things legislatively, we could make it possible for these people to increase their income and to lower their exposure to the downside of the economy, and it wouldn't be a difficult thing to do. And for some reason, government just doesn't want to give people their land, which they've occupied for perhaps even 100 years. They let the chiefs administer that stuff, which leads to all kinds of corruption and extortion. And weed should be legal. In the Eastern Cape, they could grow this as a subsistence crop. They could sell it internationally, locally. And a lot of these families would pull themselves out of poverty. Instead, the government likes to keep them beholden. They like to say, you will get your social welfare check, but you need us. We don't need government as much as they think we need them.
Well, that's what Anthea didn't quite point out there. She said, like, you know, it's not an achievement for social welfare, but for the NC, it's a massive achievement. That's how you buy votes.
It's also how you keep people in your thrall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Someone under the foot is far more reliable than someone running around.
Yeah, not to mention the secondary industries that'll burst out of legalized weed, like hemp, fabric, textiles, paper, even fuels. It's not just like us wanting to smoke boom and eat Fritos.
It's the most amazing thing.
Factories will spring up, etc., etc.
And how about some tax breaks for small spaza shops and people who run in the informal economy and want to get into the formal economy? There are lots of people who do informal trading all over the place, street vendors. How about we allow these people to enter the formal economy without trying to punish them with onerous taxes and compliance issues and regulatory issues? Why worry about all of that in an economy that's partially third world and partially first?
Stop it.
I mean, let people do their business. If you make mohodu and I want to eat that at lunchtime, I should be able to buy that, and it's got nothing to do with the government. Stop it. It's silly, right? Well, your enemy is sitting in Parliament. Your enemy is sitting in the union buildings. For good people in this country who want to make a living and don't want to live below that poverty line, which I can't believe is as little as 400 and something rand a month.
I wanted to ask whether that was per person, still completely outrageous, or per family, utterly impossible to fathom.
Household income. It's impossible to fathom. It is.
And also, I mean, a family can be two people or it can be nine people. That's like, it's not, I mean, that can't be.
That's the figure.
Yeah.
It's the official Statistics SA figure. It's frightening. All right, we'll come back with that and news and everything else you want to know. You can WhatsApp us on 0797482090. You can call us on 0861555189. Some chain smokers for you. Get your day going. See, our friend Casper Lee is spending time with the chain smokers. Have you seen that? He's flying on the private jet with them, all kinds of things.
Oh, casually, as one does.
Oh, yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, I won't make it to your party. Got caught up in my own selfishness.
This is CliffCentral.com.